Welcome to the Zai Lab podcast series on e-discovery and information management technology. My name is Evan Wiesel, and in this episode, I will interview Dr. Jan Schultes on some of the basics of electronic discovery. Jan, would you mind starting out by outlining the key benefits that are driving companies to implement an e-discovery solution in-house as opposed to outsourcing it?
Yes, no, absolutely. Now, there are a lot of companies these days that are considering to bring either the entire or part of the e-discovery process in-house. Now, of course, the core benefit, the main reason why people want to do this is to save costs. External vendors and service bureaus can be very, very expensive. It's also very hard to predict what exactly the costs are going to be. So that's a main reason. At the same time, if you bring part of the e-discovery process in-house, you not only save costs, but you can also limit your legal risks by giving your outside counsel less irrelevant data and also by being able to find out what's really going on. And it also brings me to the second reason. If you do control your data and you do control part of the e-discovery process in-house, it is much easier to perform a thorough and more efficient early case assessment. That's, of course, very important in order to determine what's really going on and who involved, but we can talk a little bit more about that later. And last but not least, one of the other benefits of bringing e-discovery in-house is to reduce the overall information overload and thus make it easier and make it also reduce the risks and exposure of future potential e-discovery processes by implementing and enforcing proper information governance and records management practices. And I think at the end of the day, the last point is really what most people should be thinking about if they really want to solve the e-discovery problem once and for all. But as this is often a major investment and also something which takes much more time, many people want to bring only start moving when e-discovery is all over the place and when they are in a lawsuit and when they are confronted with the very high costs of e-discovery. And that's where bringing e-discovery in place definitely also helps. But again, at the end of the day, in order to really solve the problem, you should start where the problem arises, and that's with improper and information management and also the tremendous information overload that we're all suffering from. So if you can solve that, you automatically solve the e-discovery problem. But if you don't have time or money to do that, then there's also a lot of other things you can do in order to reduce the cost and the risks by bringing part of the e-discovery process in-house.
Well, those are some great benefits, Jan. So I guess the next question would be then, you know, how does one evaluate an e-discovery solution in general? What should you look for with so many options and approaches available to organizations today?
Yeah, Evan, you're absolutely right. There are an enormous amount of options and approaches. And one of the other big problems is that a lot of people use the same terms for different things, or they use different terms for the same things. So there's a lot of confusion in the e-discovery market. And this is exactly why George Sosha, together with Gelbaum, many years ago, they defined the EDRM model, the electronic discovery reference model. And what they did is that, because they also found out that people used different terms for the same thing and vice versa, and what they did is they tried to define what an e-discovery process is actually really about and which parts should be covered and what should be done in which particular part. Now, one of the things you should start by looking when you are thinking about bringing e-discovery in-house is to try to find out which parts and which phases of the EDRM model you would like to bring in-house, and if the vendor can actually align with those different core elements of the EDRM model. And sometimes it's better to just take a number of different phases of the e-discovery process and bring it in-house, or then to bring everything in-house, but it really depends on your particular type of problem that you want to solve, and also the internal resources that you have and where your main pain points are. The second thing that you should really look for is that software alone will not do the job. E-discovery is a very strict process. It's a process governed by many federal rules, very strict rules, and if you don't follow the rules properly, then you will be sanctioned and you will get fines, and opposing counsel will get after you. And at the end of the day, if you do it wrong, then bringing e-discovery could mention or could mean that you will actually pay more than what you would initially paid if you would have outsourced it in the first place. So it's very important to do it right. And one of the things you need next to proper software is a defensible methodology and a repeatable approach. You should look for a vendor that has such a methodology, that has such an approach, and that supports such a process, which is compliant with the EDRM, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and that's also compatible with their software. Third thing is that there's different types of certs, and you can read more about that on our Xylab blog. But what's very important for legal certs is that you have more like an exploratory type of search, because in a legal case, you often don't know exactly what you're looking for, especially if you want to do early case assessment. Users don't always know what type of words to use. It could be that words are misspelled. Maybe they are deliberately misspelled. Maybe information is deliberately hidden because people don't want to be found. And it's very important to have a search tool that supports this type of exploratory search. It should also be mentioned that if you use a search tool, that you should understand how your search tool works, because it could very well be that as part of the defensible methodology, you're being asked in court exactly about these type of search specifics. And if you want to read more about it, again, there's a ton of information on our blog about this. You should also look if the technology that you're buying to bring part of the e-discovery process can actually deal with real-world settings. You will have to deal with millions, if not billions, of files. You have to deal with proprietary systems. You will have to deal with thousands of different file types. You have to deal with legacy file types. If you work in an international environment, you have to deal with different language support. That's not only characters, but also code pages. There's a lot of information that you have to take into account, a lot of issues you have to take into account if you want to support foreign languages. And all of these things you should address when you try to bring e-discovery in-house. It should also position you for the future, because bringing e-discovery in-house is the first step. The first step is to help you to lower the cost and lower the risks of a particular lawsuit or particular case. But at the end of the day, you want to be litigation ready. You want to implement proper records management principles and policies and tools. You want to build a scalable and digitally sustainable archive. And also, you know, this is where I believe we're going in a couple of years from now. You want to implement something which is called enterprise information management. And this is not just software, but this is like procedures, technology, policies, principles, like everything that it takes to manage your information in your enterprise, not only in your unstructured data, also your structured data. And that will actually make you really litigation ready.
Well, that's great, Jan. I mean, I think that was a great overview of how to evaluate an e-discovery solution. One of the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago was early case assessments. How and when is that conducted, and what factors should companies consider when looking for a tool to do early case assessments?
Yeah, early case assessment is really one of the benefits if you want to bring e-discovery in-house. This is one of the things that you cannot do if you use an external vendor. Now, why is early case assessment important? It is important because without early case assessment or with the wrong early case assessment, it could very well be that you are forced into a non-favorable settlement. We know that 97% of all cases are being settled, only 3% goes to court. So it's very important in that settlement process, when the lawyers discuss and when the lawyers consider all the different options, that you have the right information. That means that you want to find everything that's really relevant. You don't want to be confronted with a document by opposing counsel that you weren't aware of, because that really is very bad for your negotiation position. And this is an important part, or actually the most important part of early case assessment. A lot of other vendors say, well, early case assessment is just to limit the number of documents as soon as possible. But that's only part of it. Early case assessment is knowing what's going on. So, you know, the real question is, how early is early enough? And I think at the end of the day, if you can search your information systems real time, live, all the live data on your file servers in your email without having to do a very expensive and very complex and also disturbing legal collection, because don't forget it, if you want to do a legal collection and a legal hold, you're going to shut down everything. You're going to shut down the email servers, you're going to shut down the file servers, you're going to send legal notices to all of your custodians. Custodians are being disrupted. These are people that you hire to do business, and suddenly they're involved in lawsuits, and they have to do testimonies, and they have to do all kinds of other things. They have to find information, fill in requests and agreements, and you don't want them to do that. You want them to, you know, focus on the business. So it's very important that you can search all of this data without interrupting them, knowing what your legal risks is, really find what's relevant, what evidence is in your data, what's in your favor, what's against what you think, are there any surprises, how many employees are involved, will you settle or will you not, and if you settle, on which terms, what's your budget and what's your threshold. And all of these things, you need very strong search, you need exploratory search, and you need access to your data, real-time, live. And if you have that, then you can assess before you disrupt the operations or before you're going to do a legal hold or a legal collection, what's really going on. And part of this, of course, is very related to information management. And the easier you can do it, the faster you can do it, the sooner you can do it, the better.
Okay, great. Well, one of the questions that is always asked is about ROI when it comes to technology. Can you give us an ROI or what an organization expects in terms of ROI from bringing eDiscovery in-house?
Yes. Well, ROI with eDiscovery is really phenomenal. There are reports from Gartner which says that clients reported a return of investment within 3 to 6 months, or one big case. And this is really what we see at our customers. We are not really discussing ROI that often with our customers, because our customers know what the ROI is if you're going to save tremendously on your internal or external legal counsel fees. Lawyers and attorneys are very expensive people, and the more information you have to analyze and the more information you have to deal with, the more expensive legal counsel you need, whether it's in-house or out-house. And so it's very clear to a lot of our customers what the return of investment is, and really we have seen many cases where the return of investment was one big case, meaning that the entire investment in the system to bring eDiscovery in-house, including training, professional services, everything, training of your internal people, was paid for after that one case, and everything after that was an even bigger return. We've also seen some other numbers. There's a lot of information about this that can be found on the internet or in the reports from IDC, Gartner, George Soshas, EDRM, Sedona Conference, and also a lot of case law. But typically, 1 terabyte can easily result in several millions of cost in legal review. We have seen a case where it was almost 19 million. We've seen cases where 30 gigabytes of data resulted in $3 million legal bills for the entire review. So you can definitely expect to reduce costs 50% to 80% if you bring this part of eDiscovery in-house, because what you're going to do is you're going to dramatically reduce the quantity of irrelevant data that's going to be sent out for review to the other party or to your own external legal counsel. What we also see, and this is very interesting, is that one-third more is spent by organizations without content archiving solutions. So if you don't have a proper records management or content management or information management system, or you don't know what's out there in your organization, you can expect to spend 33% more than companies that do have these type of systems whenever you're hit by an e-discovery. So there's a lot of indirect savings. On top of that, you will have more efficient collection. You will have less chance of sanctions or fines. You can integrate with other systems. And at the end of the day, you know, you can even consider thinking about the benefits of knowledge management and information valuation and knowledge sharing, because if you manage your information better, you also see that it's easier to access and it's easier to share, and your employees will not reinvent the wheel over and over again. But again, that's not the most important thing. The most important place where you can save money is in the review phase. That's where 65% of all the money is being spent in legal e-discovery. And the less data you have to review by expense of counsel, the more money you save. And these are just a number of the statistics that we've seen out there.
Sure. Well, we're running out of time. One last question for you, which is, I've seen on your blog posts a couple of times, I believe, a reference to faith-based e-discovery. Can you talk to what exactly you mean by that?
Yeah, faith-based e-discovery is actually something which was introduced by George Sosha from EDRM. And what he tried to say is that there are organizations that actually depend on faith, that whatever is out there will not turn into something really nasty whenever they're going to be into an e-discovery. They assume that they know where all the relevant information is. They assume that they can collect it. They assume that they can produce it. They assume that they can defend their approach. Often, you know, there's an entire legal team, and they assume that they know how to do e-discovery. But what happens in a faith-based approach is that they actually have faith that it's the case, and often it's not the case. And what you see is that you have to be very careful, because if you don't know exactly what you're going to be running from surprise to surprise. You have to make sure that there's cross-functional collaboration between IT and legal and also the board. You have to have a proper methodology, and if you don't, and if you rely on faith-based e-discovery, you will absolutely have an issue and have a risk that you are at risk of sanctions. And you know, there's many cases, and I don't want to repeat them too much because they've been told a lot. There's the case between Qualcomm and Broadcom. It was like $8.5 million in sanctions. There's been many, many cases where judges overturned the sanctions and merely cited negligence on the part of employees involved in e-discovery. There's even internal in-house counsels being fined and being sanctioned because they did certain things very wrong, or they couldn't defend how they did it, or they couldn't repeat it because they did it in some kind of a way where it was a non-repeatable process, it was not proper documented, or, and this is where the sanctions are highest, if you accidentally destroy data, that's being seen as destruction of records. And we all know from the FBI Enron case how much that can upset the courts. And so you have to be very, very careful. And, you know, with the right e-discovery system, together with a proper methodology to do the e-discovery in-house, that's the best way to reduce the cost and also reduce the risks. And if you and you should definitely not depend on faith-based methodologies, because at the end of the day, if you do that, you are going to pay more than what you would have paid initially if you would have outsourced the entire project.
Well, great. Thanks, Jan. I think that was the last question I had. I know you address a lot of these same ideas in your blog. Can you give us an idea of what the next topic will be in terms of what you'll be writing in your blog and maybe perhaps an upcoming podcast?
Yeah, no, the one of the next topics we're going to write about on our blog is actually about early case assessment, what it's really about, and how important search is in early case assessment, and that early case assessment is not only going about reducing the data, but also being able to really know what's going on. And I think that's a very relevant topic. Another thing that we're going to do a podcast on very soon is email management. Email management is still a huge problem for a lot of organizations. And email is also the place where a lot of e-discovery start. So in our next podcast, we're going to focus on all the tools and all the solutions that are out there and what to think about if you want to do proper email archiving.
Well, thanks, Jan. Those sound great. Our listeners can access more information on this topic, including technical white papers, from zilab.com/podcast24. You can also check out Jan's blog at zilab.wordpress.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @zilab. Thanks again, Jan, and we'll talk soon.